Hi, good afternoon. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star's editorial department, filling in for Bill Buckmaster, who I understand is on a fabulous vacation on an island somewhere. We wish him happy, happy vacation days while we're stuck here in Tucson battling the wind. We're here today on a Thursday with State Senator Steve Farley, Democrat from Tucson. We're going to be talking about the special session that the governor just called for next week. We're also going to check in with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kozacik, and we're going to spend some time with Humane Society of Southern Arizona's Chief Development Officer, Hillary Van Alsberg, to talk about some exciting news over there and what they're doing to help our area's homeless pets. So, Steve, thanks for being here in the studio.
Always great to be here.
And I understand that you have a daughter who is waiting for you.
She is. This is the last day of school for Tucson High, and I've been told my dad license will be revoked if I'm not there on time.
Okay, well, we will do everything we can to get all the information out of you and then send you on your way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, so tell us, what is the latest word about this special session?
Well, we just heard about an hour ago the governor made her call to the special session. It's going to start Tuesday at 1:30. We haven't yet heard whether or not Senate President Andy Biggs has accepted the terms or is going to have a one-day session with waiving the rules or do the three-day session. Last thing I heard is he wanted to do it 3 days so that his members could take a look at it real carefully. Now, this particular package has been developed with a lot of Maine child welfare advocates throughout the entire state. It's been developed over the last 6 months to come up with something that really gets a handle on the crisis we've experienced in child protective services. And I'm not sure we need another 3 days for Mr. Biggs's caucus members to get on the floor and scream about how government is wasting money. The bottom line is we wouldn't be in this situation with all this additional spending on taking care of kids in the system if we hadn't cut all those prevention programs over the last few years. It's almost like a grand experiment. If you cut the prevention programs, how much more will you pay later for kids whose lives have been ruined and are now in the system and completely on the public dole?
You mentioned funding, and that's something that has been ongoing in Arizona for as long as I can remember. Can you walk us through what happened in this last legislative session with funding for child protective services, even though I know it's called something else now, everyone still refers to it as CPS.
Right.
And what happened with that, and what do we expect going forward? Is this something where money will be allocated? Is this just talking about bureaucratic organization?
There's going to be about $54.5 million in the proposal from the governor that will go towards doing real triage stuff, hiring new caseworkers, getting potentially even outside investigators involved, because there's all these non-investigated cases that were discovered last fall, which there were phone-in tips to the hotline, which were never followed up on or investigated. Plus, there's now this new type of thing called NRIs, not recently investigated cases, which are cases that haven't been investigated in the last 90 days. And that's growing, it's skyrocketing right now. The last thing we have is April, and that was 2,000 more than February, which is about 16,600 cases not recently investigated.
So does that mean if I am a neighbor, for example, and I think there might be something wrong and a child might be in danger, and I call the child protective hotline and I make a report that nothing has been done and it's just sitting there? Is that the kind of case that we're looking at? Do you have any sort of idea of the circumstances that those NRI cases might be?
The NRI ones are ones that someone has looked into it initially, but then didn't follow up within the last 90 days, which is standard procedure because bad things can happen to kids in much shorter periods of time than 90 days. So it's not a good thing for us to have that happening. There just aren't the people in the system. There isn't the money in the system. And the whole system is being overwhelmed because we've cut out a lot of the prevention programs like child care subsidies, which were keeping kids safe in the first place. The entire amount, now there's over 15,000 kids in the system at this point. The entire amount, that's 6,000 more than when we cut the child care subsidies, that entire amount is neglect cases, not abuse. Neglect is what happens when you go to work and you leave your kid at home without anybody watching him.
And so neglect would be your child is, like you said, you know, you don't have adequate child care, or you don't have, you have to leave a kid who's really too young to be by themselves home or with someone who isn't qualified to care
or
for
them. Or in a well-publicized case in Phoenix, a woman who was a mom of two kids left them in her car while she did a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly connecting the dots of what happens in that situation.
So what will, going into the special session, what does that look like? What is going to get done?
Well, we'll first read it on Tuesday, probably not do much else. Then we'll have committee hearings on Wednesday and probably do debate on the floor, and then final read on Thursday. Unless Biggs can agree with the governor to go ahead and do it all, waive the rules, and do it in one day. I don't see any reason why we can't do that. We've been looking at this thing. It has the consensus support. It's not enough. There's not enough in here, but it has the consensus support based on what Biggs and Tobin will allow the governor to do.
Andy Tobin being the Speaker of the House.
Tobin being the Speaker of the House. So we need to get this through at least. One of the things, the child care subsidy issue is only $4 million in this package. It's about $25 million to keep all the kids off of the waiting list that's currently there.
And how many kids are on? It's like 6,000.
6,600.
Kids waiting.
Kids waiting to get on the child care subsidy so that their parents can go to work and not leave them at home in danger.
So do you anticipate that being a political fight in the legislature?
Well, from what I hear, they're not calling it child care subsidies. They're re-entitling it something else more so that Republicans cannot have to say that they voted for child care subsidies, even though that was something invented basically by Ronald Reagan in the 80s as a Republican backbone thing, welfare to work, give someone a hand up, not a hand out, let them do the subsidies so they can work instead of take welfare. Now, for some reason, the Republicans in the legislature think that Ronald Reagan is a liberal, and they want to vote for something they think is more compatible, like Family Integration Services or some such title they're coming up with. So even the $4 million will be a fight, but they'll call it something else so they'll be able to vote for it. It's kind of Orwellian up in the legislature.
And so whatever it's called, child care subsidy or some fantastic new name,
yes,
that no one will remember, that is basically helping a family pay for child care in a center qualified child care, licensed child care provider,
right?
Because and help foot that bill so that person can then go to work.
Exactly.
Is this something that you're hearing a lot from constituents about?
I'm hearing a lot from a lot of constituents, whether or not they need it. Some of them do need it. They're calling and they're saying, I don't have anywhere to put my kids, so I can't afford to live in my home and house them, feed them anymore. But I'm mostly hearing from other people who just think it's insane. When you have somebody who finally is seeking to get a job and they get a job and it pays minimum wage or slightly above, they can't afford to then turn around and pay minimum wage or slightly above to someone to take care of their kid, or they don't have the money to be able to have a house and clothing and food in the first place. You're putting people in a lose-lose scenario in that case. So I'm hearing from plenty of people who aren't actually involved in that system, saying that that's not the kind of state they want to live in. There's a moral and ethical issue involved here.
And it seems to make fiscal sense to pay for safe child care up front rather than on the back end let bad things happen and try to deal with the situation after there has been allegations of neglect.
Well, that's exactly it. If you can pay a little bit up front, you'll be probably saving 5 to 6 times the money down the line. And that's why we're in special session now. I've heard a lot from the other side about, why are we just throwing money at the problem? Well, we're not. You stole money from the solutions. And what happens is down the line, you're going to spend a lot more money for a kid in the system whose life has already been ruined than you would have to keep that kid safe in the first place. And it's our responsibility, because once a kid's life gets screwed up and they end up in the system, foster care is a bad place to be if you want to grow up and end up contributing to the economy. That kid will often go right to the juvenile system and not be a contributor to the economy, but will end up dragging on the economy his or her entire life. The little bit of money we invest up front saves a ton of money down the line, and that ought to be a conservative budgeting principle.
So how do we know that this is going to be more than just a giant job description, throwing money at the problem? How can taxpayers, people who care about kids, are interested in this, make sure that this change really is going to be substantive and not just more of the same.
Well, this is specifically laid out. I have great trust in Charles Flanagan as the new director of this new Department of Child Welfare. He was at Juvenile Corrections. He did a great job there. He actually knew the names of every single kid in the Adobe Mountain facility that he oversaw when he was over there. He really does care about the situation, and he's been working with these child welfare agencies, including the Children's Action Alliance, who I have immense respect for. And figuring out exactly how this money could be spent to be most effective at triaging the current cases and starting to do a little bit to stop the current, the future cases from happening through prevention. They're all laid out specifically what's in the program. There's not slush funds happening, and I think there's a tremendous amount of focus right now from the governor because, frankly, these NI cases embarrassed her, and she doesn't like being embarrassed, so she wants to get on top of it and make these things happen. Whether or not the Senate majority will allow her to do that is another question.
Well, thank you very much for Steve Farley, Democratic State Senator from Tucson, for coming in. I know you have places to be.
I do. My daughter's already calling me. I can feel it on the phone.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and good luck up in Phoenix next week.
Thank you so much. You take care.
You too.
Hey, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman from 5-Star Termite and Pest Control. You got bugs? They driving you up the wall? I'm telling you, you will not be sorry. You call my friend Shelby Hawkins at 886-0045. They are more than competent. They're very economical. And check this out. They're friendly to our environment. 886-0045.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook. Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
Another business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient. It can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Jerry!
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 8/31/14. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star's editorial department. I'm a columnist and I write editorials. And I am sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, who is off on a fabulous vacation. Thanks for spending your lunchtime with us. We are back with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kozacik. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Sarah, hi. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm well. Hey, I don't want to throw you off your game, but could I start with a couple of things?
Of course.
Both related to two of your columns, actually.
Yes, absolutely.
One of them, I wanted to thank you for what you wrote today about PAC, the Pima Animal Care Center.
Well, thanks.
It's such a huge issue in this community, and one of the lines in it that you wrote was so right dead on, and that is they're doing the work because pet owners haven't been responsible in the spay-neuter area. In large measure, and it's such a huge deal, and just from the standpoint of the health and welfare of the animals, they need a new center out there. It's going to be a bond issue next year, and they've got that tent city going on out there now, the pup tent, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, it looks like a giant wedding tent.
Yeah, and so it was such an important issue, and I'm glad you wrote about it. I hope people take advantage of the promotion that they're running. What is it, this summer, right?
Yeah, I think through the end of May, they have the animals that are in the giant tent. Their adoption fees are waived, if I have that correct. They're trying to hit the goal of adopting 5,000 animals between June 1st and August 31st because they are trying to reach a goal to meet a Rachel Ray challenge competition, which would get them $100,000, I think.
Yeah, there's some cash involved. So very cool. I'm glad you wrote about it. And people need to educate themselves on that before they vote on the bond, because that's an important issue. And so that was one. The other one, a few weeks ago, we had another project raised. That's the diversion program for prostitutes.
Yeah.
And we heard back this morning from one of the judges involved, and it was really a good news story. There, three of the women who were picked up that night have one has returned home to live with her parents and turn her life around. Two more have entered diversion. And one of the two that entered diversion and appeared before the judge today was a lady that night we had to actually transport to the hospital because she was so strung out and she needed immediate care. And her sister came in with her. It was clear that her sister was really encouraging her to get her life turned back around. And so that night, those three plus there was a juvenile prostitution ring that was broken up that night, and they actually got the pimps. Which was really, really important. So helping to separate the very young girls from the people who are dragging them down. So it was just a good news story this morning from the judge that the three ladies appeared before, and I know you've written about it before and participated on the evening, and so we'll make sure that you're up to speed next time we do one of them.
Great. Well, thanks for letting us know about that, Steve. It's really an important program, and I had written about it a couple months ago, I think, but I'm really glad that you brought that to our attention. And I wanted to also remind our listeners that we have that PAC isn't the only organization in town that's doing really good work for animals. We have the Humane Society of Southern Arizona, their chief development officer, coming up on the program in a bit. So I'm really glad that we're able to talk about animals and kind of a holistic way across the community. So thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And Humane Society is also in a development mode, financial development, because they've got a new site that they've identified. And so they want to expand. They want to get out of the place they've got over on Kelvin.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Glad you're talking about it.
So Steve, in the city council, what's new?
Well, we're wrestling with the budget stuff, as always, but we're closing in on it. I'm, quite frankly, not real pleased with the direction we're going, but, you know, it's a part of the process, and we'll work our way through it. But we had tentatively voted to approve a budget ceiling the last time around. There's one more public hearing coming up in the middle of June, and then we'll adopt it before the end of June. I mean, we have to. But, you know, I'm just concerned that things are not going to be particularly better next year, because we have a lot of police and firefighters going off on what's called the DROP program, a deferred retirement program, and I don't think that we really set the table for a lot of the financial challenges we have next year in terms of getting ourselves structurally balanced. But
what does deferred retirement mean?
It means that they can they set a date that on which they're gonna retire, and once they do. It's a couple years out, and we're coming up on those dates, right, at the end of this year and at the end of next year. During the interim, they don't pay any into their retirement anymore, and so they get the extra cash, and the city's setting aside money for the retirement. But we know that we're going to have a huge chunk of cash that we're going to have to write to these men and women when they walk out the door, just in terms of the drop payment, the money that we have to pay when they walk out the door. And it's going to be in the $3-4 million range. That's coming next year and later this year, but we also have the whole issue that I've been pushing on, the pension spiking and the sick leave sellback that I think that we as a jurisdiction really need to get ahead of, and I can explain those in a little bit more detail. The sellback is simply this. You can accrue as a public safety employee an unlimited number of sick hours. And you can, after a certain period of time on the force, whether it's police or fire, you can sell them back if you haven't used them. You can't do that anywhere else in the private sector, and it comes out of the general fund. So that's an issue for me, just as a part of the benefits package.
And do you know, are you selling them back at the rate that you earn them? Presumably, you've gotten raises over your career,
yeah.
Or is it at your last? Your highest.
At your current rate.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you're selling them back at your current rate. It's cost the city between $2 and $2.5 million each year for the last three fiscal years, and probably longer than that, but I didn't look any further back than that. And so that's one issue. But the second one is piggybacked on top of that, and that is that for a long time, we have been allowing people to use that sick leave sellback as a way to boost their pension. That's in violation of state law. The state law says that your base pay explicitly cannot include the sick leave sellback dollars to spike your pension. We've been letting people do it, and so finally we're going to put a stop to that. My sense, though, is that we need to go back and claw those dollars back out of the combined base plus, and make sure that when they do retire, they're only being credited for the legitimate base pay, and not spiking the pension when they walk out the door. So those are two big issues, and they're both budget related because they both affect the general fund. And as far as the pension is concerned, it's forever. I mean, it's these folks walk out the door, and we're paying a pension, and it impacts the general fund year over year over year. As long as they're collecting the pension. That's why getting our arms around that spiking issue is so key right now.
Well, I want to continue talking about this, and I know we have a break to go to, so if you can hold on with us for a few moments, we'll take that break and be back with Steve Kozacik, Tucson City Councilman. We'll continue talking about police, fire, law enforcement, pay, and other city council issues.
Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cunada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Tucson Desert Art Museum, Tucson's newest art museum, is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerverde Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star's editorial department, and we are here for sitting in for Bill Buckmaster with Steve Kozacik, Tucson City Councilman. And we were just, to recap, talking about the situation with the Steve, what's the best way to describe this sick leave?
Sick leave, it's called sick leave sellback.
Sellback.
Sick leave sellback, where you can sell back unused sick hours. And we have about 550 public safety employees who did it last year. There's nothing illegal about selling them back. It's a benefit. I just think it's a bad policy because it frankly, in my world, sick leave is to be used. If you're sick, you stay home, and if you're not, you go to work, and it's not supposed to be used as a benefit at the end of the year. I understand how we got here, and quite frankly, Sarah, it's because in years past, governing bodies, city councils, haven't had the guts to simply say, we're going to give you an increase in your base pay. And so they've been hiding it. They've created this sort of group of stealth benefits, and one of them is the sick leave sellback, because the public's not aware of it. And so we've got the sick leave sellback, and we've got tuition assistance and career enhancement and bonuses and all these different kind of benefits that are pushed off to the side because mayors and councils were afraid to say, we're just going to give police and fire a pay raise. So the pushback that I've been getting from public safety, I think that they're missing the bigger picture, and that is this. If we can take care of and really shine a light on these benefits, I called them stealth benefits a second ago, that nobody knows about, and address some of them, such as the sick leave sellback, put a price tag on them, put a line item price tag on each one of them, and say, here's what the value of them really is. Then we can have the conversation about the base pay, which is what everybody wants to make sure, that our public safety workers are being paid competitively with other jurisdictions. But if we do, but you have to include the benefits package in that calculation. And so I'm saying that the bigger picture is, let's be competitive on a base pay standpoint, but you can't ignore the other ones. A few weeks ago, I also wrote an op-ed that you guys thankfully printed, and it was called The Civic Openness in Negotiations, a COIN process. Costa Mesa, California is using this, and basically, in a nutshell, what it does is it allows the public to see the value of what's being negotiated, the cost of what's being negotiated for public sector negotiations, and it also brings in a neutral third party to facilitate the negotiations. I'm hoping that the city manager and our labor organizations really, really get a hold of this idea so that we can talk openly and publicly about everything that's on the table.
Well, isn't it kind of, it has to be uncomfortable, the perception that you're arguing against benefits for police and fire, you know, public safety. Don't people who put their lives on the line to protect the rest of us deserve all the benefits and salary that they can get?
Well, I don't know that they can get. We absolutely need to be competitive in the marketplace. But the pushback that I've been getting is, in my opinion, it's misguided, because their perception is that I'm trying to pull the rug out from under our public safety employees, whereas, in fact, what I'm trying to do is be able to identify the full package of what they're getting. And their argument has been, we're paid less than Phoenix, or we're paid less than Mesa or other jurisdictions. And my point is that if we want to talk about base pay, then let's make sure that while we're talking about the base pay calculation, we're also including the value of all of these other benefits that are, in fact, legitimate costs to the taxpayers. And if we can start chipping away at those other benefits and roll those dollars into base pay incrementally, then we can get up to the competitive base pay salary that they're really after.
Do you think that City Manager Richard Miranda, former police chief, and current police chief Roberto Villasenor will get on board with the COIN process?
Well, they might get on board with the COIN process, but neither of them are going to get on board with my call to, number one, get rid of sick leave sellback, and number two, stop the spiking, quite honestly, because both of them have done it. And it would be the height of hypocrisy for either of them to say, well, we can't support this. I mean, just for example, Chief Villasenor, in 2013, turned in $16,000 worth of sick leave to bump his pensionable income. It'd be a little bit hypocritical for him to stand up now and say, "Oh, this is a bad thing." Number one, the spiking violates state law, And I think it's interesting that our chief of police is engaging in something that explicitly violates state law. Now, he's not breaking the law. Let's not misunderstand that. The city is allowing this to happen, and the city needs to stop it, or we're going to get sued.
How did this come to light? I'm not remembering.
The spiking?
Yeah.
Well, I brought it to light.
So that was something that you uncovered?
Yeah, and have asked the city attorney to make sure that he issues, and he now has issued an opinion that says, the opinion says very simply that, yes, state law is explicit. You may not use unused sick leave as compensable income for the purpose of calculating your pension. The city of Phoenix is being sued right now over this exact thing. And so so Mike Rankin, our city attorney, has issued an opinion saying we need to stop this. I said to Mike Rankin, I said, yes, but we need to stop it. We need to stop it now, not on July 1st. And further, we need to make sure that we go back and disaggregate the dollars, the sick leave from the base pay, so that when these guys walk out the door, the money that they're being paid for pension is not the spiked amount. But to your point, neither Miranda nor Villaseñor are gonna get out ahead of on that because they both benefited from it.
So how's it gonna? Is this require leadership from the mayor and the council? How does this change?
Well, the city attorney's already issued an opinion. Our city manager is going to follow up on that opinion and indicate. And I wish he had done it several weeks ago. And so I'm not sure why he's dragging his feet, but he needs to issue an administrative directive saying that we are no longer going to allow people to spike their pensions consistent with state law. The piece of it, Sarah, that I think I'm going to be bumping up against him on is clawing back the dollars, is taking the spiked dollars out of people's compensable income before they walk out the door. That's where we're going to get sued if we let that happen with guilty knowledge, and that's a fight yet to have that I'm still having with Mike Rankin and the city people.
Well, and it's you can understand if someone this has been the practice, it's been mm-hmm. how things you plan your entire retirement on this. I can see how that would be really problematic for a lot of folks.
Yeah, and that is true, and yet at the same time, if it's against the law. You know, the city is kind of in a situation where they say you can plan all you want, and we can promise you a Lexus at retirement, but if it's against the law, we can't do it.
Right, right. I think that's
that should be controlling.
I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about this downtown entertainment district, and it seems we see the streetcar going back and forth doing its test runs. It's going to start operations July 25th. Have the rates been set? The fares, is that all a done deal?
They're going to be consistent with the SunTran fares.
Okay.
And so you can go from one to the other and back and forth, and they're still working out the kinks in the SunGo card, so you can use the same medium to go from a bus to the streetcar, and so it's not like you have to go and get a different ticket each time. So the fares are going to be the same. We finally agreed on the hours and bumped them back a little bit for, what is it, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, mm-hmm. so that it's more consistent with when the bars close.
Yeah, to 2 a.m.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And as far as the entertainment district is concerned, what that is briefly is we set a geographic boundary that right now state law allows jurisdictions to set up an entertainment district, and within that district, the 300-foot limit between a school or a church and a place that sells alcohol, whether it's a bar or a restaurant, is waived. Now, it's not waived as far as process goes, and by that I mean that the schools and the churches and the neighborhoods around the establishment applying for the liquor license still have the right to protest, and they'll still go through the exact same process as currently. The difference is that the entertainment district opens up the door for an establishment to even make the application. And so the same. Once they make the application, the whole process kicks in.
And with the downtown redevelopment, it's going really. It's thriving. There's there are bars, there are restaurants, but the retail, like with Buffalo Exchange closing its doors down there, it seems that the retail is not keeping up with the more bar traffic, restaurants, that sort of traffic. What is your thought on that? Is that something that was expected? That people aren't going there to shop. That people don't seem to be going there to shop.
Yeah, Buffalo Exchange shutting down is a big drag because everyone supports them. Here's what my thinking is: we're seeing a demographic shift right now in who's living and working and playing in the downtown core. We have One East Broadway; it's a residential site that just opened up. One North Fifth is another one. We have a place called the Herbert that's just opening up. These are not student housing complexes. We're about to do a third-party financial analysis on a hotel for the downtown core. We're going to do that on June the 3rd. And so as we see the demographics of who's living downtown change, then I think the retail is going to follow. And we saw that a couple of weeks ago when we announced the grocery store that's going to open up, the joint ownership between the Tubac Market and the Rincon Market. Those two families are getting together and taking over what is currently the Beowulf Theater. So as we see the age and the intentions of the people who are living downtown change into a more market rate, people who want to live there, not transitory student population, then I think the retail is going to follow. And I think the indicator of that is the grocery store that's coming. One of the things that grocery stores are very focused on is headcounts. And they just do a data-driven, are there enough bodies there yet for us to move in? And the downtown Tucson market that's moving in finally got to the tipping point where they said, yeah, we're seeing more than just students down here now, and so we're moving in. So I think the retail is going to follow. And, so it's not just going to be, bars and nightclubs.
So it's not just going to be drunk college students?
One would hope, yeah.
Speaking of college students, I know you work over at the U of A, and it seems that Tucson kind of empties out after this week with college graduation and all the rest. Does your schedule change at all? Is Tucson summer slow for city council and working at the U of A?
Not for me. I'm still drinking water out of a fire hose at McHale because we're doing a complete remodel. In fact, if you walked into McHale right now, you would see all of the seats are demolished and torn out. The arena floor is demolished and torn out. We are putting in all new lighting, all new seating, and whole new floor. We're remodeling the locker rooms for six or seven different sport programs, and all of that has to be done by the time the student athletes get back in August and September. So, this is not slow times here at McHale.
Wow, there is no rest.
Yeah.
That is true. Well, Steve, thank you so much for spending your lunch hour with us. We really appreciate that. I wish you a happy summer. I hope you'll get a chance to get somewhat of a break.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Sarah. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Thanks to Steve Kozacik, Tucson City Councilman, talking with us about some financial issues, the streetcar, and we will be back shortly with a conversation with Hillary Van Alsberg, who's the Chief Development Officer of the Humane Society of Southern Arizona.
Here in Tucson, we love our beautiful mountain views.
But large windows and sliding glass doors are huge energy zappers.
At American Openings, we build our doors just like our energy-saving windows to keep the heat where it belongs, on the outside. No matter the style, American Openings will create your doors right here in Tucson at a fraction of our competitors' costs. And although the price is less, our quality is excellent. Call today and enjoy our beautiful views year-round without losing your cool.
Call 664-1202 or visit AmericanOpenings.com.
Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. There's always a party or event going on somewhere, thanks to Arizona Party Rental. We're ready to roll out the red carpet for you. Listen to what our customers have to say.
Hi, this is Casey Plivchak, Director of Club Events and Sales at 49er Country Club, where we know what it takes to make an event a great success. It takes a beautiful location, a lush manicured golf course, great food and service, and the help of Arizona Party Rental. Whether we're hosting a wedding, a golf tournament, or an outdoor barbecue, Arizona Party Rental provides us with everything we need to make sure that our guests have a wonderful time. From tents to tables, linens, or kitchen equipment, Arizona Party Rental has it all. We want all of Tucson to enjoy 49er Country Club, and we count on Arizona Party Rental for a reliable, excellent hometown service. You can too.
Hey, thanks a lot, Casey. It's amazing what you and your team have done to make 49ers what it is today. Visit Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in southern Arizona. Stop by our showroom on Speedway just west of Alvernon or online at arizonapartyrental.net.
The important message you're about to hear is brought to you by Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in southern Arizona.
Is your water hard to live with? Are you tired of water that tastes bad and smells bad too? Do you have hard water buildup on your shower walls, tile, and faucets? Are you tired of dry skin and dull hair? Are you tired of dingy laundry? What about premature replacing of faucets, fixtures, dishwashers, and water heaters? Well, it's time to do something about it, and Culligan Water of Tucson has a solution. A high-efficiency water softener that can eliminate these problems for $9.95 per month for the first 3 months rental with an annual service agreement. It's easy. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700 for complete details on this introductory offer. This is a limited-time offer, so call us today and start enjoying all the benefits and the savings of a Culligan high-efficiency water softener now. Remember, 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
UA Biosphere 2's new ocean gallery and its large viewing windows give tour visitors a look under the surface of the existing Biosphere 2 ocean. Within the ocean gallery is the new Return to the Sea of Cortez exhibit, which chronicles the storied 1940 journey of author John Steinbeck and marine biologist Ed Ricketts to the Gulf. Experience this remarkable journey for yourself. Come visit Biosphere 2 today. Info at b2science.org.
Hi, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, sitting in the lovely KVOI studios with Hillary Van Elsberg of the Humane Society of Southern Arizona. She's the Chief Development Officer. And I want to make it clear that the Humane Society of Southern Arizona is entirely local. You're not affiliated with any other Humane Society or organization.
That's exactly right, Sarah. We are all local.
So when you hear the Humane Society of the United States, some other organizations, that's not what you guys do.
Right. We're not actually affiliated with any other organization. We are completely local. We serve Southern Arizona. We're celebrating our 70th anniversary this year, and we don't have any affiliation with any other organization.
Okay. You guys have some fantastic news. You have the Tankersley Trust commits a $1 million gift to the Humane Society of Southern Arizona. Tell us, what is that about? How did that come to be?
Oh, it's fantastic. We're actually very excited about it. The Tankersley Trust, how it came about is there's a local family who is renowned for their philanthropy and love of animals. Basie Tankersley was the owner and founder of Almara Arabians, and her daughter was Tiffany Tankersley. And they both loved horses and dogs and animals of all sorts. They always had golden retrievers and a menagerie of pets. Basie's granddaughter actually shared with us recently a story about her love for raccoons and mice and any other animal that would just come in the door. So the Tankersley Trust has made this commitment toward our capital campaign for the Basie and Tiffany Tankersley Welcome Center in their honor.
That is really inspiring as far, I mean, obviously not everyone can give $1 million, but it's, I think, a really great example of how you can do what you can to help animals in need.
Absolutely. We are so grateful. And really, we're grateful that they had the faith and the trust in us to make such a significant investment. We're thrilled to have this demonstration of their confidence in the Humane Society and in this really important project.
And could you talk a bit, you had a very, very sad story of two animals, dogs that came in who were injured, they had been abused, one didn't have her ear anymore. How are they doing? And I know you have a challenge going in terms of trying to raise money for a medical fund to care for animals who need medical assistance.
That's exactly right. That we have a challenge going on right now from a local family who has generously given us a match up to $5,000 for donations that will go to our Second Chance Fund, which is a fund that we have that helps animals like the pets that are in our care right now, Vanna and Lily. Really sad story. Got dropped off at our shelter. And while we're grateful to the folks that brought them to the Humane Society and we're able to care for them, there is an ongoing investigation into what's happened. It's a serious cruelty case.
How are they doing?
They're doing all right. Well. They are. I mean, they're happy babies, and we're thrilled to have them in our care, but we'd really like to not have anything like this ever happen again.
Yeah, animals' resiliency is really pretty amazing. So tell us about the Second Chance Fund. What does that do?
Well, what's great about the Second Chance Fund is, you know, the Humane Society is so much more than just a shelter. And people think of us, we're a shelter, but we're actually the oldest and largest nonprofit animal welfare organization in Southern Arizona. So we have more than 50 programs that help pets and the people who love them in our community. And what's exciting about things like the Second Chance Fund is we get pets in our care that need extra attention and extra help and extra medical care, and we can use those funds to help pets that really need extra love.
And so do you help get them back into shape where they can then be put up for adoption?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's for.
And how many pets, dog? I know I adopt rats, guinea pigs, mice.
Love it.
Rodents from the Humane Society. So how many pets of all varieties do you get through your doors in a year?
You know, on average, we get about 10,000 pets through our doors each and every year. But it's just a fraction of what's actually out there in Southern Arizona in terms of the homeless pet population. So there's a lot of work to be done.
Right, because Pima Animal Care Center gets 24,000, they were saying, through their doors, which is just an incredible, I mean, when you put all of the, plus there's so many rescue organizations that are acting on their own, it's just, it's mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. It's astounding. It's a community-wide problem, and we all need to be aware and take some time to educate ourselves and find what we can do to help our community help the pets.
So short of just loading up the minivan and taking everyone home, which is not a good idea. But what can people do? Spay, neuter? How are we going to tackle this problem?
Well, prevention, spay neuter is actually the key. It is actually the most important thing that we as a community can do to battle pet overpopulation. And, you know, the Humane Society has three main pillars that we focus on. One is shelter and placement, obviously, and getting the pets that are homeless out into the community and finding their forever homes. And the second is prevention. It's making sure that the community understands their role in spaying and neutering their pets. And the third is education and outreach, and that's another component of that.
So can you even adopt an animal from the Humane Society without it being spayed or neutered?
Absolutely not.
And what are some of the qualities that you have in pets that, I mean, they're not all giant dogs with aggression. I mean, they run the gamut, don't
no,
they?
No, no, and it's such a myth, actually. We have the figures, which you don't want to get too statistical down in the weeds on that, but nationally and locally, 30% of animals that are in animal shelters, not just here but nationwide, are purebred. And so we get all kinds of pets of all different varieties in our care, and there's all kinds of friends waiting.
And you get there's a way, if you come to the shelter, there's areas to kind of get to know a pet, take them a test drive is not a good word to use, but, you know, spend some time out of the kind of chaotic atmosphere of all the people and all the pets. How does that adoption process work?
Oh, it's fantastic, actually. And that is kind of taken for a test drive. they get out and you get to have a social interaction with the dogs, especially. And really, you can bring your own dog to meet with them and see if they're a good fit. And we really just, we take some time understanding what kind of pet it is that you're looking for, what your home situation is and what your particular interests are, and try to make a good match for everyone so they find a forever home.
Excellent. Well, is there a website that you can send people to? How can people find out more about the animals you have available and how to make a donation?
You bet. It's hssaz.org, and we'd love to take your donations. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. My name is Sarah Garrett Gasson. I'm really glad that you've been here with us today. We've had a really good conversation, I think, with Steve Farley, Democratic Senator from Tucson, Steve Kozacik, and just wanted to say thank you very much and thank the fine folks at Culligan Water.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.